Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, December 28, 2018. A top Sudanese official says less than 20 people were killed in the protests so far.
In northern state, we have 3 deaths, and in the River Nile state, we have 5 deaths. In El Gadarif state, we have 6 deaths, and in the White Nile, 3 deaths.
And one expert says growing populations around the River Nile could be a ticking time bomb.
We are sooner or later getting into a situation where conflict will be a dominant form of countries' relationship.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Thousands of Sudanese in Khartoum, Asbara, and other cities across Sudan took part in more anti-government protests following weekly Muslim prayers today. Protesters are demanding that Sudan President Omar al-Bashir step down. They're also angry over skyrocketing prices for bread and other basic needs. A committee of professional organizations involved in the protests said authorities raided a meeting of opposition leaders in Khartoum. Authorities detained 9 people, including Sadiq Yusuf, a senior leader of Sudan's Communist Party, according to a statement released by the committee. Speaking in Arabic today, Sudan's Minister of Media, Bishara Jamal, said in Khartoum that 19 people have died in the protests so far.
In northern state, we have 3 deaths, and in the River Nile state, we have 5 deaths. In El Gadarif state, we have 6 deaths, and in the White Nile, 3 deaths. So, the total is 19 people. Also, there were 2 policemen among the dead in the protest. Some people were killed in fighting between traders and thieves.
Amnesty International put the death toll at 37 people earlier this week. Bashar says more than 100 people have been arrested.
They arrested 107, most of them from movements. Most of them from Abdel Wahid Muhammad Noor. They will be taken to court. We are also going beyond the authorities. We are going to open a case against Abdel Wahid himself after authorities demanded that he be brought back home with Interpol.
Abdel Wahid is head of the Sudan Liberation Movement and is believed to be living in France. Many Sudanese have said the government has instituted a blackout on social media sites, including Twitter, Facebook, and WhatsApp, in the wake of the anti-government protests. Experts have warned in decades of years' time to come that the Nile waters will become the biggest security threat in the Nile Basin region as a result of a rapid population growth. Officials say as the region's population grows and its demands on the Nile water increases annually, the level of the Nile waters will continue to remain stagnant. The Nile Basin region comprises 11 countries, mainly in eastern Africa. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
40-year-old farmer John Cholmayol inspects his goats and cattle on his farm at the bank of the River Nile in Bor, some 90 miles east of the capital Juba. Chol practices mixed agribusiness. He gave up working as a nurse in a government hospital and ventured into agriculture back in 2014. Chol says his salary as a nurse was not enough to take care of his family of 6 children and a wife. Like many other residents of the 11 countries that comprise the Nile Basin Initiative, Chol considers the Nile's passage through his village a blessing. He uses the waters of the Nile to grow crops like cassava and sweet potatoes and to keep his goats and cattle well hydrated. On average, Chol says he can save about 200,000 South Sudanese pounds a year or about $1,750, a tidy sum that most civil servants will never earn in a year.
When I work in the hospital, I have seen my children are increasing in number and the work of the government is not even feeding my children. So I tell my wife, okay, let me go back, let us use agriculture as a tool. And when we take this thing to the market, everybody will buy. And the money the people have from the government, they will come to us.
Chol purposely established his farm along the banks of the River Nile for easy access to water for irrigating his crops and feeding his animals. He now plans to expand his 10-acre farm with the increasing revenues he has accrued from the past few years of farming. Agriculture is the main economic activity along the banks of the River Nile in the Nile Basin region, according to Mohsen Albawi, a water and natural resources policy specialist at the Nile Basin Initiative, or NBI. Albawi says the number of farmers like Chol along the River Nile are expected to double in 30 to 50 years as the regional population grows. And he says more farming, fishing, and other trade activity is likely to provoke regional insecurity regarding the use of the Nile waters as more and more people turn to the Nile to make a living. Webeleme Feket, a resource specialist who has been working for more than 10 years at the Eastern Nile Technical Regional Office, an arm of the NBI in Addis Ababa, says the 11 countries bordering the Nile are growing economically and a growing population means the need for more water will grow exponentially.
So population pressure is putting pressure on the water through demand for food, demand for energy, demand for urban use, demand for industrial use. All this, you have to feed more mouths, you have to close more houses, you have to energize more houses. There is going to be urbanization. Countries and governments are pressured to supply this growing population. So it is self-evident that a growing people will require a growing amount of water, directly or indirectly.
Albawi says indicators reveal that over the last 200 years, the hydrology of the River Nile in the region has remained at the same level, which means there won't be enough water to meet the growing demand. The current population of NBI member states is about 505 million people. Albawi says this figure increases by roughly 2.5% annually. Between the years 2050 and 2070, he says that a figure is expected to reach 1 billion people.
In all cases, there is no basin-wide common strategy to deal with the problem, and this is one of the weaknesses. And what needs to be done is to move on both axes. One, to try to limit the population growth to a manageable figure. The 2.5% is too much. Compared to Europe, to Australia, to many places all over the world, this is double or even triple what they have as an average rate.
The demand for water is likely to increase competition for use of the Nile waters among NBI countries. The situation is even worse for landlocked and developed NBI countries like South Sudan trying to industrialize their economies. South Sudan has the poorest infrastructure of the NBI countries with little industrialization. At least 90% of the population depends on the Nile waters for domestic use, according to engineer Thomas Jiang, a senior government official at the South Sudan Ministry of Water Resources and Irrigation. Jiang says South Sudan's use of the Nile waters is still being limited by inadequate resources and conflict.
If you want to go to the state to visit, that is state, to see what is the problem, what is the situation of their water supply,
you cannot get access to go. Roads, and maybe the aircraft is very now expensive to go to the state. Coming to the national one, also the funding is not enough. Government has become very big. The results we have at this time, they are very limited.
Feket says unless all 11 NBI countries cooperate and address the water problem, it's a ticking time bomb for the region.
Without this predictable, regularized cooperation, we are sooner or later getting into a situation where conflict will be a dominant form of countries' relationship.
Feket says if you don't cooperate with your neighbors, you will inevitably face conflict over a precious shared resource like water. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Some South Sudanese refugee leaders in Uganda's Bidi Bidi refugee settlement camp are accusing some senior officials with the World Food Program and UNHCR of promoting hate speech and provocative language while talking to refugees. Last week, thousands of South Sudanese refugees in the Bidi Bidi camp protested against what they called WFP's poor staff code of conduct. Daniel Friday Martin has the story for VOA from Arua, Uganda.
Several refugee leaders in Bidi Bidi camp accused World Food Program and UN refugees of using harsh language when addressing complaints from refugees. A South Sudanese refugee leader who identified himself only as Elias for fear of reprisals from officials says some WFP staff use abusive language when they are talking to refugees in the camp.
Our demand is only food. We have the food in the stores. Some foods are in the vehicle. People are yawning. They don't have food. Those families, we did not receive their ratio. When you say we are refugees, we have distance, are very far, police, health centers, I like this. No. World Food Program Uganda said you can walk even 12 kilometers to get your food. There was a situation where they said, what is the refugees? They are supposed to construct the warehouse in Barakal.
Another refugee leader who identified himself only as Lega says refugees have the right to complain about lack of services in the camps.
What is the criteria of policy implementation in Uganda? Is that law in Uganda allows policy implementation without sensitizing the community as refugees, as our rights have been observed? I don't know whether in international policy that you can abuse refugees. We have been forced to accept the policy, otherwise the donors' funding will be cut off.
Mark Kelly, WFP Security Advisor for Eastern and Central Africa, was disappointed to see South Sudanese refugees protest at the Bidi Bidi camp last week. He says the World Food Program is committed to addressing the needs of the refugees.
I know you've seen worse because of where you've come from and where you've fled. However, and that behavior, it's not tolerated by WFP. Yes, there's issues, but we should be talking through them, and I understand they've been going on for some months. But that frustration cannot come out in a violent manner because it then impacts us doing our jobs. Because the priority for WFP is to get this food out 100% to complete the distribution.
Gerald Simon, Commissioner for Refugees Affairs in Uganda, says efforts are in place to correct mistakes made by some humanitarian workers in the past.
Let me be blunt here. World Food Program made a mistake. So our World Food Program, I think we need to change. Sometimes we need to consult rather than doing things alone. Language used by some IPs, which is bad. If there are such members of staff with World Food Program and UNHCR, my office is working with the UNHCR and country and World Food Program offices to weed them out and take them back where they belong. We shall not look at them misbehave with impunity.
Ekwero Musa is the Minister for Disaster Preparedness and Refugee Management in the Ugandan government. Musa says he has directed the World Food Program to ensure timely distribution of food assistance to the refugees. Musa also warned the South Sudanese refugees against violating the policies and the laws of the host country.
Food distribution should start immediately. Some of the officers who were not collaborating and cooperating with the government of Uganda official to be accountable. I have also told the refugees that those who will be found to have really deliberately caused destruction of property will be handled by the laws of Uganda. We are not going to deport any refugee, but we are going to lock any refugee up who messes up with the security of Uganda.
Bidi Bidi is one of the biggest refugee camps in Africa, hosting more than 200,000 South Sudanese refugees. Some of the audios used in this story were received from Ugandan-based journalist Chandia Stephen. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Arua, Uganda.
A Spanish aid boat with more than 300 rescued migrants docked near the Spanish city of Algeciras today after a week at sea. The Pro Activa Open Arms carried people from at least 19 countries, many of them African, and 139 of its passengers were children. The migrants were rescued from three smaller vessels near Libya on December 21st. The ship was denied permission to dock in Italy and Malta, and it was forced to sail several days to Spain. tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Will there be chaos in this weekend's DRC elections, or will there be peaceful? Find out more and when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you do when you are in a bad mood?
I usually would move away from the environment of the agitation and then get a quiet place and pray. Usually when I'm done praying, the agitation and the stress, I get some amount of relief.
Sometimes I decide to sleep and maybe read a novel that can make my mind come like back to normal. Yeah, that's what I normally do.
I rather stay alone and I listen to music, uplifting music, music that has good lyrics that would uplift my spirit.
Okay, when I'm in the bad mood, I sometimes play video games just to make me feel happy.
Actually, I call mom, I talk to her, tell her what's disturbing me. She advises me then, it's a done deal.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. As the Democratic Republic of Congo hurtles toward contentious and repeatedly delayed elections on Sunday, observers say they're worried about chaos and violence ahead of, during, and after the polls. And despite a new survey predicting an opposition win, observers say they expect the ruling party to come out ahead. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Congo's Electoral Commission, known as CENI, says the long-delayed polls for president in the National Assembly will finally take place on Sunday. But observers are predicting widespread confusion and unrest. Congo analyst Stephanie Walters of the Institute for Security Studies says she is less concerned about the result of the poll than about the dangerous environment that more than 40 million voters may face.
We are getting reports about how poorly organized the CNE is. The voting material hasn't been properly distributed. We're hearing that potentially, instead of counting ballots, the Independent Electoral Commission will transmit the final results by internet. And we're just very concerned about the technical legitimacy of this, about the potential for chaos and the potential for violence.
The poll was originally set for 2016, but officials delayed it repeatedly, allowing longtime President Joseph Kabila to stay in office 2 years past the end of his term. This year, authorities maintained that the poll would happen on December 23rd, until a warehouse full of electoral materials mysteriously burned to the ground, and officials announced another one-week delay. This past Monday, officials announced that they would also postpone voting in three volatile areas, which also happened to be bastions of opposition support. The announcement led to violent protests in the city of Beni on Thursday. Many observers, like Claude Kabemba, the Johannesburg-based director of Southern Africa Resource Watch, say they are not optimistic. Although the latest opinion poll has shown opposition candidate Martin Fayulu with a commanding lead, Kabemba is betting that Kabila himself, and not Kabila's chosen successor, Emmanuel Ramazani Shadari, will ultimately win.
We are heading toward a crisis. We are heading toward chaos. We are heading toward President Joseph Kabila remaining in power, because that is the strategy, that is the idea, that is the purpose of the entire maneuvering that is being done around, is for him to showcase to the world that I have been willing to go to elections, I've organized elections, the Congolese people have put money, put up an independent electoral commission, but this has happened. This has happened.
Congo is funding this election, having refused international assistance. And on Thursday, the government announced it would expel the ambassador from the European Union after the EU renewed sanctions against several Congolese officials, including Shadari. VOA sought comment from the Congolese government on the expulsion and on the pre-election atmosphere, but the government's top spokesman did not answer repeated calls. Walters says she expects Shadari to triumph.
I think we have many reasons to believe that the government is going to try and hijack this election and have its incumbent Ramazani Shadari win. I have very few indications at this point that the government wants to hold a free and fair poll in a peaceful environment. And so I think it is highly likely that we will see Joseph Kabila's successor being declared as the winner.
In its nearly 60-year history as an independent country, Congo has never experienced a peaceful transfer of power. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
A late opposition call for a nationwide strike in the DRC went largely unheeded today, with some people saying they didn't hear about it in time. A new poll gave opposition candidate Martin Fayulu a strong lead, with President Joseph Kabila's handpicked candidate running third. There will be longer lines to vote in Kinshasa because some replacement voting machines didn't arrive in time after a fire destroyed most of the ones that were being stored in the capital. The international aid agency Oxfam has suspended operations in Beni and Butembo, and Doctors Without Borders pulled staff out yesterday due to security concerns before allowing them to return. VOA reporter Abdurrahman Dia is in Kinshasa and spoke with my colleague Paul Alexander about the latest.
One of the opposition candidates had called for a day of strike, what they call a death city, asking people to stay home. But here in Kinshasa, it was not very successful. Traffic was still heavy in some areas. Shops were open. We have been told that the city of Beni and also in Goma, in the eastern part of the country, there have been protests. The Electoral Commission has announced that they have canceled more than 1,000 polling stations for Kinshasa. It's roughly about 14% of the station, the polling stations for the city, saying that they still were not able to recover all of the machine, the voting machine that they were expecting. And the result of this is that instead of having 600 voters per machine, they will now have 700 voters per machine, which obviously would mean longer lines.
What are the concerns about violence related to the election, especially with a new poll showing the main opposition candidate, Fayulu, with a strong lead and Kabila's handpicked successor running third?
There is always a risk for violence when it comes to elections in the DRC and probably other countries in Africa as well. But specifically here, people are on edge because many of them, at least in the opposition, don't trust the electoral body to conduct a free and fair election. And when there is no trust, there is always a risk for violence or not accepting the results.
Anything further from Beni?
There is really a risk of propagation even more for Ebola because the protesters did attack one of the transit centers, and about 20 suspected, or at least to some people that were supposed to be checked for Ebola, some of them had escaped, so they don't know how many of those really had the virus on them. So that is really a health issue. And today we are told there were some more protests there. So it's probably more volatile than here in Kinshasa for now. In Kinshasa, people, I think, are just waiting come Sunday before really expressing how they feel on the outside. There's room for surprises always.
That was VOA journalist Abdurrahman Dia in Kinshasa speaking with my colleague Paul Alexander. In the Ugandan capital, one man is using the game of kings to help children of the slums. Robert Katende founded the Chess Academy in an effort to keep kids off the streets and teach them the thinking skills they need to help them get ahead in life. The academy has produced several international competitors and has taught hundreds of kids how to play chess. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
It's the beginning of a two-month school break in Uganda, and for poor families in the Katwe slum, getting food for their kids will only get harder. But many children can get meals at the Som Chess Academy. Funded by Samaritans, the academy provides lunch every day, along with the chance for children to develop skills by playing chess. Founder and head coach Robert Katende, who grew up in the slum, says the academy has restored hope for many of these children.
Especially the girls who before thought they had nothing to really achieve in life because of the culture, because of the society, them being marginalized, growing them up just to become mothers, now dreaming big to be a professionals in different fields.
Nansubuga Gloria, an orphan who was abandoned by her mother when she was 11, is now Uganda's first player to be a Women's World Chess Federation Master, the third highest ranking in the chess world. The journey has not been easy for the 17-year-old.
Because there is a time I wanted to quit. When I used to go to international tournaments and I used to come back when I've lost, because my coaches told me, let's go, maybe we'll get a candidate master title. But even a candidate master title, I couldn't reach to it. So my hope was down.
In 2014, the academy created a special program for disabled slum children. Dennis Mwesige started playing chess in 2004 and in August represented Uganda at the 43rd Chess Olympiad in the United States, winning a bronze medal.
It has changed my life. I can use hands to play chess, even mouth, and I know to do computers.
In 2010, SOM Chess Academy sent 14-year-old Fiona Mutesi to the 39th Chess Olympiad in Russia. Her story was later turned into a movie entitled Queen of Katwe. Perhaps one day, with one move at a time, Uganda will not just produce chess movie stars, but the next Garry Kasparov or Bobby Fischer. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
That's our show for this Friday. We leave you now with the song Kalina Eshtakal by Lomeric Hassan. We've been listening to Lomeric Hassan with the song Kalina Eshtakal. On behalf of our engineer Mark Ferguson and director Nadia Taha, I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for joining us this evening. We hope you have a peaceful weekend and that you can join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Sala boda boda, delisa choko. Oh, sala ataliza tu, delisa choko. Galide jenge, galide nyam nyam, galide sorwiji, kalamade kuluma kwe. Sibu choko kaselani ya kwana Keina istaka Keina sibu duku kasumagu atakiti ya kwana Keina istaka Keina sibu duku kasumagu atakiti ya kwana Keina istaka. sana belede. Kenina sibu shoko kasilani ya kwana a. Kenina istata. Kenina sibu lugu kashu maguwa tsakiti ya kwana a.